Howdy do, buckaroos. This is the Mac Observer Daily Observations podcast for Tuesday, November 27th, 2018. I'm your host, Kelly Gamont. With me today, I have Charlotte Henry. How are you, Charlotte?
How are you?
Excellent. And also with me today, John Martellaro. How are you doing, John?
Good. Nice to be here. Good morning.
Now, John, you rolled in this morning and said, and I quote, "I have a bee in my bonnet about the iPhone XR." And so I would like to find out more about that.
I have not written about the XR yet much because, as we know, scattered rumors from the supply chain that Apple's cutting back on component orders don't tell the whole story. Tim Cook has explained that to us. Brian Chaffin has explained it to us. Other analysts are well familiar with the idea that a spot cutback here and there, because of the complexity of the supply chain, the long lead times, and the multiple suppliers for individual components, cutting back at any point, at any amount, is not a tried and true indicator of the fact that global demand for the iPhone XR is not what it should be. However, I've been giving it time to stew and percolate, and it's still on the front burner with a lot of people. And yesterday, John Gruber took up the discussion based on a note from Goldman Sachs analyst Rod Hall. Mm-hmm. That it appears from multiple sources and multiple ways, multiple observers, that, yeah, the XR isn't doing quite as well as it should. Now, we won't know for sure, and we won't even know for sure then.
We'll never know for sure.
Report, because Apple doesn't disclose individual model sales numbers, and in fact, mm-hmm. they're not going to disclose numbers at all in the future.
Right.
So we won't be able to get good visibility into how the iPhone XR, except from indirect analysis. Mm-hmm. So Gruber's hypothesis was that it wasn't just the performance and the price that was out of kilter for a lot of global buyers, but rather it was the fact that there was a psychological contrast compared to last year. Last year, as you did, you could jump on the iPhone 8 or 8 Plus right away and have a Touch ID mm-hmm. and be very comfortable. But if you were an exotic frame of mind and an expansive frame of mind, you were willing to wait a month, as many of us did, for the glorious, exotic, more expensive iPhone X. But this year, Apple got into a little trouble because there were technical difficulties with the XR display. And so that forced Apple's hand into rolling it out later. And that was created a kind of a reversal of the psychology. If you wanted a phone right after the event, and these events get a lot of press mm-hmm. in the national news, the September 12th event, and everybody had an iPhone on their mind, and the 10 and the 10S were glorious and upfront. And then people, except for the people who are in the know in the press, sort of dimly got the idea that, yeah, later there's another phone coming. It isn't as good. It's less expensive. I'm going to get the best now. Mm-hmm. And so there was maybe a bit of psychology and reverse psychology from last year in that if you wanted second best, you could wait for it. Mm-hmm. And maybe that didn't go over very well with a lot of customers. Now, the calculus was that people would be happy to spend less and get a phone that was almost as good. The question is, what percentage of the buyers had that frame of mind? It could be there were a lot, but not a significant enough percentage. Maybe a equal or more overwhelming percentage of people thought, no, I'm going to get the best because Apple only sells the best, and I'm not going to wait for second best.
But here's the thing that I wonder about with that is when it was actually released, and just before it was released, when it went on pre-order, because it had the same sort of system as the earlier wave of phones, if I recall, which was it goes on pre-order this Friday, on this Friday, and then the following Friday, they will be available. And what I think of when I saw that was a lot of people at that moment saying, you know, the XR is a good phone. I mean, remember, I was calling it the 10C because it's the one that comes in colors for people who are having trouble mm-hmm. keeping track of how many iPhone 10s there are.
As is your way.
I'm just still grumpy about it. But here's the thing, is that loads and loads of people were writing pieces about, like, this is a great phone. As a phone, here's how it stacks up against stuff that's not sold by Apple. Here's how it stacks up against stuff that is sold by Apple. Like, the XR, for all of its alleged inferiority, is a nicer phone than the 8 I have from last October. So, it's got a better camera. It's got Face ID. It's got all these other things. If that's a thing that you enjoy. I tend to upgrade because I'm excited about getting a camera that's at least two iterations better than the one that I have at the moment, because I'm an every 2 year person. So the thing that I have wondered about with this is,
well, that's another subject, because cameras aren't going to improve, but computational photography is.
Right.
Which is another subject.
It would be nice if I had portrait mode and all those kinds of things, which I don't, because I have a mere mortal 8 and not a 10 of any flavor. So the thing I wonder about is what's going on with this. And, you know, I feel like, again, this is one of those things that is only a story because it's Apple. Because if anybody else, you know, if Samsung was selling the Galaxy something and managed to, what's the phrase they always use on the earnings call? If they managed to achieve supply-demand balance, or whatever they call it, I feel like any other company would be applauded for this. For getting to the point where, you know, we've made enough to satisfy the initial wave of zero-day folks, and now we're just adjusting to make sure that we don't have bajillions of them when we only need squillions, you know? And I wonder, again, like, would this pass the smell test if you found and replaced Apple with Samsung or with Dell or with any other electronics maker? You know, if we were talking about PlayStations, you know, would this be the end of Sony? Like, this is what I wonder about.
Well, you know, Apple's going to sell a lot of phones and they're going to make a lot of money. But the questions are troubling in some cases, because Apple is not going to report numbers anymore. They're going to report sales. It's sort of like the process of the ISPs, and like they, in order to show growth to the stockholders amidst the churn and amidst the cord cutting, have to force the raise in prices every year in order to show growth. Mm-hmm. And that's the kind of mode that Apple is in getting into. And so there are questions to be asked about Apple's psychology and the way they roll out the products. And that, in terms, affects the growth of the company. So there are interesting questions to ask. Now, one point that Gruber brought up yesterday that I thought was fascinating was that last year people had a choice between a Touch ID and a Face ID phone. Mm-hmm. And for those people who were resistant to change, they had the option of selecting an iPhone 8 with Touch ID. This year, there was no such choice.
Right. There was, it was less clear of a line.
Right. And so maybe people weren't so excited about the idea of waiting for a second best phone that forced them away from their favored Touch ID. Mm-hmm. And this relates to fractions of the audience who feel one way versus the other, and fractions we don't know, but typically we focus on one of the fractions and we suppose it's bigger or smaller than it might be, and forget about the other fraction of people who have another kind of feeling. So it's a very complex issue. But
the other thing that is a feature that needs to be considered here, though, for example, this is why I have an iPhone 8, is price. I could not bring myself to pay $1,000 for a phone.
That's almost the only factor that needs to be discussed. I mean, I'm exaggerating slightly for effect, but when it comes to purchasing high-end electronics, I suspect for most quote-unquote normal users, price is everything.
Yeah, and I think that's where a lot of people are making that consideration. And, you know, John, like you said, like, whatever the proportion is, we don't know, but there are a lot of people who don't want a $1,000 phone. You know, I know it's $999. I look forward to your letters. But the real issue is that for some people, that's a huge difference. And some people aren't necessarily interested in having all of the computational photography that goes into the XR, the XS, or the tennis match, or, you know, any of the, like, super mega phones. Maybe what they want is just like, you know, I'm on a 6, I'm on a 6S. It's time.
I think the mistake that we perhaps are making is a proper assessment that there are people who are price sensitive, but that the fraction is higher than it actually is. I think when Apple rolled out the 10S in September.
Well, hold on, John. I think Charlotte's going to try and disagree with you. Charlotte?
I make a point of almost never disagree with John Martellaro because, frankly.
Oh, please. Have at it, Charlotte. Have at it.
I have a New Year's resolution for you, Charlotte.
but I truly believe that for most, as I say, quote unquote, normal users, is almost everything. I think we really shouldn't. I think just because we are all fascinated by the computational photography grades in charging capabilities, the different accessories, etc. that one can get with these new devices. I think for most people, what they want to know is what I have and can I afford it?
The question came up in Gruber's article about people's casual assessment of the relative merits of the two phones. The 10R has a better battery life. It's less expensive, but the 10S has the 2X optical zoom. We've talked about this before. And it has the OLED display. And so people are not necessarily always very technical and very logical about their approach. It could be something so simple, and I'm hesitant to say this, but it could be something so simple as the fact that the 10S has two lenses and the 10R only has one.
Right, but it could also be as simple as I paid about $700 for my phone 3 or 4 years ago, and I'm going to pay about $700, $800 for the new one, and that means I have a 10R now. I mean, it could be that simple, too. Like, there are a number of casual technology observers in my family, and that's kind of how they do it. Like, I have this much money to spend on a phone. Which one can I get?
Yeah, but if you buy a 10R and you add Apple Care Plus and you get more memory, more storage, you could easily exceed $1,000.
Yeah, you could, but I don't know people who are doing that. I don't know people who are doing that. That's what I'm saying. Like, there's a number that, like Charlotte said, I have this pile of money. You know, I stuck this stack of money in an envelope and I wrote iPhone on it. This is how much I have. So I get a 32 gig phone, or, you know, lots of people don't buy Apple Care.
Well, that goes against the well-known aspects of car buying mentality, where people go into the showroom thinking they're going to spend $25,000 on a Chevy Cruze and they end up, you know, in a $33,000 Impala because they got shown all these extra cool options and neat stuff. And
To
splurge. And people do tend to splurge a little bit when they want something bad enough.
On a case, there's no rust undercoating for an iPhone.
I'm just saying, when you're going to spend $800 on a phone, I think there's a significant fraction, in my opinion, of people who say, oh, what the heck, I'm going to get the best for only $200 more. And I think not everybody feels that way, but enough people felt that way that it created a problem for Apple. That's my thesis.
No, I get it. I just think ultimately the bottom line is always the bottom line, if you like. And I think at some point, I think this is happening with consumer electronics across the board. People suddenly look at the price of something and go, I don't actually need that.
Yeah, people are holding on to their phones and their cars longer these days.
Well, and like, that's a thing that I think also isn't addressed a lot of the time, is that, you know, there was a stretch, a long stretch, where this was their first smartphone. And I think the number of people who got an iPhone 10 or a 10R or a Tennis Match or whatever, there are the number of people for whom an iPhone 10 anything is their first smartphone, I think that number is really small.
Yeah.
And I think that number for a 7 or a 6, like, as you go backwards, that number gets higher. The number of people who bought an iPhone 4S and it was their first smartphone is way, way more than a 6 or an 8 or a 10.
back like, when they were subsidized and you can get one for $1.99.
Right, that too. But I think even, you know, people are fewer and fewer people are making that leap every fall with yeah. Apple. Like, I'm going from my Nokia, I don't remember the model number, that little bulletproof, you know, like
3310.
There it is. Like, not a lot of people are rocking a Nokia 3310 anymore. So they've got something, whether it's someone's old iPhone or whatever, you know?
But you could still rock a 3310 and it would work.
That oh, absolutely.
Not die.
No. No, 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 no. I'm sure there's somebody out there who bought one new who still uses it, I'm sure. But the number of people in that boat is small. And that's, you know, where we are. And particularly as phones get fast enough, cameras get great enough, you know, it's been a number, I don't even know how many it's been, but it's been a high number of iPhone models that have document scanning ability on their phones. So, you know, like, it's a good enough camera to take that photo. So, you know, we gotta, there are a number of things I think that go into the 10R. So, John, I look forward to your piece. And as soon as it's live, we will have a link to that in the show notes. And in the meantime, I want to tell everybody about our sponsors. Our first sponsor today is Hopsy. And Hopsy is like a Keurig machine, but for beer. So you can get one. I have one on my bar. You set it up and you slide, I think they're called torps. You slide this little container of beer into it and you wait for it to get cool, because that's one of the things the machine does, is keep it at the right temperature so you can have nice cold beer whenever. You get loads of different options for beer that comes from somewhere in your region. They want to make sure that they're getting you something fresh. And they also have a club that you can join where you get beer automatically. And it's pretty great. It's really easy to use. The machine is kind of cool looking. It's all this shiny black plastic and it looks like a little outer space thing that sits on the end of the counter. It's pretty great. If you want to get in on this, you can do so with the sub, which is the cool little machine. You can get a Hopsy sub home machine, 2 mini kegs of beer, 2 of these little beer selections that you can get. Each one is about a 6-pack. 2 Hopsy glasses and free membership in the monthly beer club. And you get all of that for $99 by going to tryhopsy.com, tryhopsy.com/TDO. And again, that's the home draft machine, 2 different beers to try, 2 glasses and free membership in the club for $99 at tryhopsy.com. Use the promo code TDO to get that deal. And as always, terms and conditions apply. So the other one, the other sponsor that we have today is one that I think everybody should be excited about with all of the family time coming soon. Our next sponsor is Jamf Now. And Jamf Now helps you set up, manage, and protect Apple devices, all from, you know, logging into a web dashboard. So they support macOS and iOS. So if people are getting new stuff for Christmas, you can make sure it gets enrolled right there on the spot. You can keep track of the operating system version. You can keep record of people's serial numbers. You can track all that kind of stuff. You can maintain Wi-Fi information or email information and make sure that stuff gets pushed out to these devices so they don't fall off networks. And all of it is really easy to use. You get 3 devices for free forever. Additional devices are $2 a month. You can head over to the Jamf website, which is jamf.com/TDO, and sign up for your free account today. Now, we only have a little bit of time left, and I'm a little sad about that, because Charlotte, I want to have you tell us a little bit about what you learned today about Facebook and what Parliament is doing at the moment with Facebook. Yeah, or I guess what they've just finished doing.
Yeah, just finished doing here in the UK. It was a pretty extraordinary morning, actually, in the House of Commons. I went over and Lord Allen was there. He's Lord Richard Allen. He's the head of kind of the global policy head, runs a lot of the election stuff at Facebook. He also happens to be a member of our House of Lords here. And he was there, because who wasn't there was Mark Zuckerberg. This was an extraordinary hearing because there were 24 politicians from 9 different countries that attended this hearing. It was the first time, it was the most first time since 1932 or 3, I think, that politicians from not the UK had asked questions within the UK in this committee hearing. It was probably the most politicians from a different country ever that had attended such an event, such a hearing. Mm-hmm. So it was a pretty extraordinary. And to be fair to Richard Allen, he put up a good fight, but clear, there is a lot of mistrust, there is a lot of anger, and there is a lot of skepticism towards Facebook from politicians from around the globe. You know, Titian described our democratic institutions as being upended by California. That's, you know, that I think sums up the attitude. There is huge concern over what came out of the Cambridge Analytica scandal. And obviously we put it up on the site yesterday, and there was follow up today in this hearing about some of the documents seized from 643.
Yes.
One of them alleged that there was some Russian entities with Russian IP addresses were scraping 3 million data points a day using the Pinterest API at one point. Now, listen, Facebook pushed back quite hard on that. They say this guy's a hostile litigant, and obviously he'd trying to get us to heed caution what comes out of those documents. But let's be clear, this is just the beginning of the process. And it was a pretty dramatic morning. We had a lot of criticism. We had a lot of criticism of the company as a whole failing to disclose all sorts of things. You know, they basically found out about Cambridge Analytica through the press. They didn't find it out themselves.
Mm-hmm.
It was kind of it through the press. And he also even conceded that it didn't look very good that Zuckerberg wasn't there. So he kind of accepted that. One of the other things, and this relates to something Tim Cook has said recently, is Lord Allen basically seemed to accept that regulation was coming, and the big tech firms basically seem to be taking the tact, it's coming, we better be part of the conversation, stuff imposed on us.
That does seem like that seems like the right approach, to be a little bit more proactive, in my estimation.
That's right.
You know, if you know what's happening...
Right, and that's clearly the approach we heard. You know, Tim Cook gave in his interview with Axios on HBO, and they seem to get it. But I think this is not the end of the process in the UK Parliament. This was a particularly extraordinary hearing, like I say. But this particular committee is the Digital Culture, Media and Sport Select Committee in the House of Commons, and it. A investigation into fake news and misinformation, and obviously Facebook is a rather large part of that. There's obviously the Russian stuff and the Cambridge Analytica stuff. There was obviously all sorts of issues raised around the referendum over Britain being in the EU here, where people were trying to make all sorts of claims about that, which I won't get into on this show. But there's a lot going on, and I think the British Parliament and obviously their colleagues from around the globe are playing a rather active role in taking a look at it. And I have to say, it was pretty extraordinary being there, actually, just to see 4 politicians from 9 different countries, including the members of the British committee.
Mm-hmm.
One, it was only British and Americans find impressive, but it was impressive just how politicians from all over the place, whose English could be a second or third language, were able to ask deep, in-depth, technical questions of a tech executive in English.
Mm-hmm.
The only English people and Americans are impressed by this because we're particularly bad at learning other people's languages.
This is true.
But it was impressive. I think, I have to say, a lot of people thought the hearing here dug a lot deeper than the equivalent hearings over in the US in the Senate.
I'm sure they did.
So, I mean, listen, there was still a bit of grandstanding. I walked into the room and there is a name card for Mark Zuckerberg and an empty chair. you know, they were making
well played Parliament. Yeah.
Yeah. So they had a, there was Richard Allen's name tag and there was Mark Zuckerberg's name tag next to each other, but the chair was obviously remained empty.
Very nice.
But so there's a little bit of that grandstanding. But the question, this hearing went on for kind of 3 hours and it was in depth. And they, you know, I don't know how much we learned. I think what it did do is get Facebook to put a lot of stuff on the record.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, you know,
and
it's uncomfortable times for Facebook. We've covered it a lot on TMO.
Yeah.
It is uncomfortable. It's difficult times for Facebook at the moment. And this hearing made that pretty clear.
And it sounds like this isn't the last Parliament has to do with it. They're not going to just say, well, we've had a hearing and then call it. Like, there's definitely going to be more to report on this front on your end.
I would think so. I mean, the committee itself won't stop this hearing, I don't think. This investigation. I don't think it will continue to look into this particular field. Whether they eventually get Mark Zuckerberg, they've asked him numerous times and had numerous correspondence with him and his representatives. I don't know. That is obviously will be the ultimate aim in the same way.
Mm-hmm.
A few years ago, managed to get Rupert Murdoch.
Yes.
Eventually in front of them. That they clearly want Mark Zuckerberg to appear.
Mm-hmm. I'm very interested because this was an international hearing, because the UK Parliament actively invited other people to come and talk and ask these questions and invited all these representatives from other countries to come be part of this process. I'm really interested to see what the next step is over there, like what Parliament's going to do next. I'm very, very curious to see their next move. And when they make it, you're going to cover that for us, right?
For sure. And I think you're highlighting the right thing, because how many times do we discuss this stuff and do we discuss regulation of tech firms, whichever ones, and say, so what if the American Congress passes X law or the British Parliament passes this or the French Parliament passes this? Who cares? These are global companies operating on global scales. So actually, you have to deal with colleagues from across equivalent bodies around the globe. That has to happen. Otherwise, we're never going to get a resolution to these issues for these global companies. It's not possible otherwise.
Right. And I'm also looking forward to getting to ask you questions about how the government in your country works, because I'm an ignorant American and I don't always understand it. So it's going to be...
I mean, at the moment it doesn't, but that's a different question.
That part I do know. Yeah, that's something we have in common. So I do want to find out more about this. I do want to be able to chat with you more about it as soon as there's more to report. And I'm really excited that we will have you here to translate some of this for us so that we all can make sense of what is happening over there. And with that, I would like to thank everyone for being with me today. John Martellaro, thanks for joining me.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
And like I said, I can't wait to read your 10R article and possibly talk to you more about the 10R and completely disagree with you. So next time you're on the show, be sure and bring your bell.
The Kelly bell.
And yes, and in the meantime, thank you very much, Charlotte, for joining me today.
That's right, and I'm Team Kelly, by the way.
And as soon as we're done, I'm going to give Charlotte some lessons on how to disagree with John. It's pretty fun. And I've
looking forward to it.
Merry Christmas, John. I've been your host, Kelly Gamont. This is the Mac Observer Daily Observations podcast for Tuesday, November 27th, 2018. I will talk to you tomorrow. And in the meantime, be excellent to each other.